calling. Now don't look to us. And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike Gregg. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup, and in this episode, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Barnsley. However, we will start with the show by discussing the latest team news, and there's some very interesting news in there. We have a full show, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show, Mr. Gregg. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, doing really well. London seems to have survived the great winter storm of 2017, all half centimetre of it, but London pretty much ground to a halt yesterday, but we're
really
back in business today. any bad weather, we struggle, Russ.
Wow.
You can see the weather in Europe and the weather in America we've seen, and we get less than half a centimetre and all hell breaks loose. But, it's not been too bad today, so it's fine.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. And, we're used to it here, and I think we had about 8 inches last week, and it really is, not that big of a deal for us, but we're just so used to it. All right, my friend, let's get into the show. And before we go through the team news, I guess you could call this team news as well, because this was actually tweeted out and it's official now. And I want to talk about a player leaving Fulham. Jotvabed is off to Spain. He's on loan to the end of the season with Celta Vigo. What are your thoughts about this? We've talked about this before. So let's revisit it, because now it's official, Mike.
Yeah, there seems to be a bit of confusion whether it's to the end of the season, 18 months. Do they have a chance to buy him as well at the end? But the fact is, apart from the first half dozen games where he made pretty much sub appearances, he's disappeared and, seemingly not in any kind of plans for Jokanović going forward. So, yeah, send him back. I mean, he is a skillful player. Maybe, I've been told that he struggled with the language and to settle in London, and probably best for all parties for him to go back to Spain, whether that leads to him staying there and us selling him on, or he comes back in the summer for a full pre-season with the squad, who knows? But, we wish him well, because if he does well and the team decides to buy him, then, his value will stay high, because we did, spend a lot of money on him. But disappointing, because he's a player who clearly has something, but for whatever reason, it's just not worked out.
Right, Mike. And I also think part of it was, like we've talked about on the show, where was he going to play on a regular basis? Because basically there are players there that are in front of him. It just worked out that way. So this is probably what's best for everyone.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, there's been a change in formation since he stopped playing as well. And, we've got a very settled midfield three. He's not a wide player, so I wouldn't see him playing in that role. But we've seen with Johansson, and especially and with Kearney and his passing range, maybe it's just a rough and tumble. Maybe he doesn't have that kind of energy which Johansson shows. And Kearney's obviously more used to it. So we've got other players who can step in, and maybe we will actually sign someone before the end of the window to give those guys some competition. But we brought in 14 players in last summer, and him and maybe Cabano could be seen as the two players who haven't shone and have failed in some ways. But that's not a bad percentage out of 14 players. So, let's all wish him well, and, let's see what happens in the summer when the loan ends.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, let's now get into the team news, and I'm going to read directly from it that's on the Fulham website. And we're going to do this in two parts. When asked for an update on the fitness of his squad, Slavisa Jokanović confirmed that he had a full squad to choose from. All the players are available for tomorrow's game. Callis, Parker, and Maddle are fit. So let's start with the three of them. I think the big news here, Mike, is that Tomas Callis is fit to play. Thoughts on this?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, he's been the most underrated, but also the most consistent player we've had. And when we've defended well and kept clean sheets, he tends to be in the team. And we have missed him. We have four centre-backs, and you can perm any of those centre-backs, but one of them has to be Callis. And it's shown that the other combinations, they've got some pluses, some minuses, but he seems to have, the full display of talents which is required at centre back. So I expect him to go straight into the team, and you know, he is that rock at the back for us. He makes everyone else shine. So a real bonus that he's back a week early. And I would have thought, yeah, Barnsley are doing well, but if you were gonna, if there was a slight doubt on his hamstring, you could have saved him for another week. But sounds like he's fully fit, and like I say, I fully expect him to start tomorrow.
So do I, Mike. And it's also interesting that he mentioned Michael Mallow. I believe he was dealing with something. It could have been an illness. I'm not 100% sure, but he's back. And then I was, you know, a little taken back. I didn't realize that Scott Parker might have been dealing with someone, but he mentioned him that all are fit to play, which is great. So that's part one. And obviously, Tomas Kalas is the big news, and that is a huge bonus that he'll be back, hopefully, for this match. So let's start there. Okay, but let's move on, because there's other big news that I have to share, and I'm going to read directly from this this article entitled Team News. Here's a quote. Quote, Chris Martin is fit too. He is available, and we expect that he's going to start scoring the goals. It's good news for us. He's been working with us. He's available, and he is focused on Fulham, and he is an important part of my team. All of us believe that in the future he's going to go up in value and be an important player for us in this competition and in the future too. We have resolved the situation inside the dressing room, and he's committed 100% with us. We believe in him. The team believes in him too, and I expect the supporters are going to help us like they have always done this season, as I've experienced as Fulham coach. And those are actually quotes from Savisi Yokanovic when I was mentioning all the players are available for tomorrow's game. Kalas, Parker, and Mattel are fit. Those are also quotes from Savisi. So I just want to mention these are quotes from the Fulham head coach. Okay, Mike, now we have to talk about the Chris Martin situation. Thoughts on these quotes from Savisi on Martin?
Yeah, so I'll concentrate on his quotes. And, we've spoken in the past about how key Martin is to the way we play, and he may not have got the number of goals which some fans want, but he's that, for me and for Jokanović, from what he says, is that cog in the middle that all the players work off. And Jokanović made it quite clear, you know, when this situation blew up, he wasn't going to go back to Derby no matter what. I think he felt personally let down. And, you know, it's taken a couple of weeks. May have cost us 3 points, you could argue, you know, the Brighton game, if he'd been available. But a good thing is it seems to have been resolved. And, you know, words like in the dressing room, so I suspect the players and have had their say as well to him, because, you know, there is a team spirit there. You see it game in, game out. And if we're going to get this run of wins that we need, then everyone needs to be pulling in the same direction. I also think it's, you know, interesting that Derby bought Nugent this week, and then suddenly Martin finds himself, you know, fit. I see McLaren came out with some quotes yesterday saying, you know, he was partly to blame. Well, yeah, we all knew that, Steve. And, you know, so, I mean, for me, it just reiterated that Jokanović really does think that Martin is key. You know, he's obviously fought to, you know, get him back on side, get the club behind him in whatever direction they decided to go with him, sort of playing-wise or non-playing-wise or back to Derby. And, you know, it's been resolved halfway through the month. And now you could argue we still need to find another striker, whereas yesterday we needed to find two strikers. So, from a playing point of view, it's good for us. And like I say, I've had no issues with Martin. I think he's, you know, he's a good championship striker. He's what we need. We do need another player to back him up. But then, of course, it takes us on to, you know, the situation that arose and people's own personal feelings. And I have to say, you know, looking at Twitter, looking online, it's a little bit mixed. You know, I'm certainly in the camp where, you know, he did what he did. And as far as I'm concerned, I didn't want to see him play for us again. I would have, you know, put him on gardening leave to the end of the season. And, you know, it might have been to cut my nose to spite my face, but, you know, I felt so let down at the Reading game where I spoke about it at the time, where fans drove in that fog, in that really dangerous fog, to a game, and he decided he wasn't going to play. And then, you know, players who go on strike, no time for them. But I have also said that it's up to Jokanović. You know, he is the manager. You've got to trust what he's going to do. And, you know, it looks like I suspect he will start tomorrow. It will be very interesting, the response that fans give him. I mean, I certainly am not going to cheer his name. Of course, I will cheer when we score a goal. But he's, you know, there's no respect there. He better not ever grab the badge or anything like that. And I also suspect that the first time he looks like he's not trying or makes a mistake, a number of the crowd will be on his back. So it's going to be tough for him, but I have no sympathy at all because he's brought it on himself and he's just going to have to take whatever's thrown at him by fans. But, you know, as many have said, as soon as he scores, it's going to get forgotten. Not by myself, I'm going to say. And, I am always going to hold it against him. And that might sound hard, but, you know, that is the way I feel about it. But from a playing point of view, if he puts the effort in and gets back to the way he was, you know, we had the team playing around him, then it's obviously good for Fulham. But it's just horrible the way the situation has panned out. And I wish there was another solution. But, you know, I think the most important thing for me that's come out of all this is that Jokanović wants him. He backs him. He thinks he needs him. Everything he says about him is that he's key. And, you know, we have to back Jokanović at this moment in time.
It's a very tough situation, Mike, and I'm right there with you. Playing-wise, I see how he really can help us, and that's the rub here. That's the difficult part of this, because I see his value, and also, like you, I wanted him at Fulham. You know, when all the speculation started, I wanted him. And then he started slow with scoring goals, but I still felt that he was going to come through, and he started to. And then, of course, now we are where we are, and it's a difficult situation. And I'm going to read reaction from some of the Fulham supporters. I have several comments from the Cutters Talk Facebook page, and I also have a Twitter poll that I'm going to read to you in just a bit, because I want to talk about the reaction, because that's another part of this, like you're talking about. What is going to be the reaction for him tomorrow moving forward? Because I think that's a part of this as well. It's difficult because it's a big part of me, Mike, that feels just like you. You know, maybe he should never put the shirt on again, but then you flip it to the other side. You see the value. You see how Jokanović values him. It's just a difficult situation. I don't want to be a David Holly here, you know, sitting on the fence, but I can actually see both sides of this. You know, I could, you know, because there's a big part of me that is right there with the people that don't want him to put the shirt on again, but then I also see what he brings. So that's the conflict I have. All right, Mike, I'm now going to go over the Twitter poll first, and we'll start there. And I had a good amount here, good amount. I just asked a question. Do you think Chris Martin should play for Fulham again? You know, because I wanted to get a feel for how the Fulham supporters are feeling about this. So I had 220 votes. That's a good amount of votes. 70% said yes, and 30% said no. So it's 70-30, and that's a decent sampling. However, now I'm going to read to you comments on the Cotter's Talk Facebook page, and they're more mixed. I just want to say they're definitely more mixed, and I'm just going to go through some of them right now. Colin Forknall said this: after his antics, absolutely not. You don't know how the other players may feel, and it may disrupt things, but fingers crossed we can keep this great form going. Stuart Abrey said, nope, 6 months and under 23. Show what happens when you mess about with Slavisa Jokanović. Simon Rugg, yes, but only if he issues a full unresolved apology. I definitely want your thoughts about that, Mike, in a little bit, about an apology, because I've seen a few people mention that as well. George Kenton said, not good enough to wear the Fulham shirt. Reese Boyd, no, the club needs to show it has a spine. Letting him get his way sets a precedent Let him either sit on the bench or play under 23s for the remainder. Prick. That's a comment. Daniel O'Connor, not even for the reserves. Player needs to respect the club and the fans they play for and are well paid by. Time to move on. We have a chance of playoffs after what we've been through the last few years. Need to be unified. No bad apples allowed. Barry Palmer. You know what? Martin's a snake. It seems most players are these days. But listen, let's use him to get into the playoffs and then send him packing. James Eads says, unfortunately not. Although he has found a fine patch of form, if he is allowed to return back into the fold after his actions, it will be surely disrupt the squad in a pivotal time of the season. Chris Baugh, I don't think he should play. Grant Harris, in the short term, it would be acceptable under the condition he publicly apologizes. However, I would be just as happy if he never saw anything but a tiny corner pitch at Motspur Park to play kick-ups with himself. All right, and then I'm just going to read a few more. Guy Rofe, as far as I'm concerned, he is a tool for us to use. We still need a prolific striker, regardless of if Martin is in the team or not. We can't rely entirely on the midfield to get us in the top six. Smith can't hold up the ball like he does. And then he goes on, Guy goes on and says, Humphrey isn't experienced enough to start week in and week out. Ayite in Africa, we need all the goals we can get. Looking at him as a player, he is a goal scorer in the league, as we know. I wouldn't want to see us waste him when he is available. I want to see 110% from him every match he plays, and though he's got to prove his worth to us after all of this. And that's from Guy, one of our co-hosts, and I'll just finish it off with Chris Hall. No, not if he still would rather be somewhere else. All right, Mike, very interesting comments from the Fulham supporters and an interesting poll that I ran. I just want to get your overall thoughts, and then I want to really talk a little bit about a couple of supporters talking about an apology, that they want an apology from him.
Yeah, well, it's it's the same kind of comments I've been seeing. It's you're either really strict on no, I don't want him to play again, and there's others who, he's made a mistake, let's forgive him and let him play. And then there's probably others who, just don't rate him at all and wish he wasn't playing as well. So, I'm on that. I don't want to be David Hulley, and I'm certainly not on the fence. I don't think he should play. But I can also see the benefits of him in the team. And there's still, you could run a poll even before this blew up, should Martin be in the team? And you would have probably got the same kind of 70-30, 60-40 type thing. Because there's a lot of fans out there still not convinced by him to be the right person. And so he's got a lot of work to do to win those over and win over the fans who doubt him. And, for us to progress, we obviously need him to do that. But as I say, I will cheer the goals and I will, hope he scores goals. But that's all he's getting from me. I mean, I'm not going to boo him. I'm not going to do any of that. I can imagine some of the abuse that's going to be thrown at him, and maybe even in warm up. I'm not sure, but certainly during the game, if it doesn't go right. And we will have to wait and see what transpires over the next couple of weeks. I don't think we've heard the end of this story, to be honest.
Okay, Mike. And what are your thoughts about an apology? I've seen some fans mention this. Like I said, I had two comments that talked about they want an apology. What are your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. I'm surprised there hasn't been one. And I hope it's not one in the program. I want him on screen, looking at the camera and apologizing directly to the fans. That's what, and Fulham PR should have sorted that out. And I'm absolutely strong on this. He needs to apologize to the fans. We have another, there's, West Ham have got the same issue now with a player. And, I mean, it's the fans are the ones who get treated like these guys are on, more money. They earn more in a couple of, certainly Martin and, Piatt, we certainly know. But these players are earning more than some in a week, more than some people who are going to watch them earn in a year. And, they need to show some bloody respect to fans. And God, if it's going to take him 2-minute apology on screen or something, then he should do it. And body language wise, you could be able to tell a lot from that as well.
Okay, very good there, Mike. Listen, this is a tough situation, but I agree with you. I agree with the Fulham supporters that want an apology, and I think that we need to see one. I think the fans need to see one who are going to be there at Craven Cottage. I totally agree with you on that. I if it's in the program, I agree with you, Mike. I don't think that's good enough. I think the fans need to hear it from the horse's mouth, from Chris Martin. So I'm there with you, my friend. I'm there with the fans on that. It's a very difficult situation. It'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out tomorrow, because I between me and you, Mike, you know, and I saw Slavisa's interview that you can watch on the Fulham website if you have Fulham FC TV. If I'm reading between the lines, I have a funny feeling he's going to start here. I've seen fans saying, well, maybe he'll just be on the bench. I think he's going to start based on how Slavisa is talking here. I'd be surprised if he doesn't start. So I'm be very curious to hear what the reaction is going to be here. All right, Mike, let's now go on. And I actually have some very interesting questions for you from Ask the Co-host. I put this up a couple of days ago, and I think this is a good time to for us to talk about. Actually, one is specifically for you, Mike. It's the first one. So here it is. This is from Joe Smythe. No, you'll like this one. This is from Joe Smythe. He says, has Mike heard any inside info on the Jokanović contract situation? Sounds like the press are creating drama, but it's still concerning that no extension has been agreed.
Well, no, I haven't. And, we've asked at the FST meetings in November and December, and Alison McIntosh, the CEO, has, batted it right back at us by saying, well, if we were talking and if we were going to say he's going to get a new contract, I'm not going to announce it in these meetings. So, I mean, it's been an interesting, couple of weeks. Malaga was mentioned, and then there was a dreadful piece from Paul Warburton this week in the Get London press, where he basically, just made something up. He's going to be wanted, isn't he? He's a name. He's got a team who's playing really good football. But we're not in a playoff position, so he's still got to prove himself there. But I've not heard anything. I mean, it would be great if we can get him on an extension, get him for at least another 2 years. And I have said, if that's the only signing we make this month, then, all the fans should be happy with that, because the football we're playing is great. So
right.
you hope as a manager, he's moved around quite a lot.
I think that's the concern, Mike. I think that's the concern from fans, that he has moved.
So the issue there is, he's someone who's not – he lost his job at Watford, but, we got him from Tel Aviv. So he's not someone who, if he's under contract, he's not going to be able to be moved. It just gives the club that little bit extra security. So, we're at a meeting next week with the club. We will ask again. And I would hope that if we're going to do anything, it's going to be soon. If I was Khan, NFL season's over, he should be over here sitting him down, going, sign here, 2 years, what do you want, and get on with it. And that's what we all want. But maybe both parties are waiting to see how the rest of the season pans out. But as soon as as soon as anyone hears anything, we're all going to be jumping on it, aren't we? But no, sure. I've not heard anything at all.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, here's another question from Colin Forknell. What is the situation with Ryan Sessegnon, and we need to tie him down?
Well, Ryan's youth contract runs out this summer, so he turns 17, I think it's in May, and when a player turns 17. The maximum length of contract you can offer a player is 3 years. So we can't officially offer him anything until May. There is talk that he has agreed some kind of pre-contract. Now, I've looked everywhere in the rules, and I'm not sure that's technically allowed, but I certainly can't find it anywhere. But, everything you hear is that he's very happy. at the club. His brother is there as well, and maybe that's important to him. But so we're going to have to wait until May really to hear anything about any kind of contract, because we can't do anything officially until that date. But already, it's been going on for a few months. But there was one particular tweet last week by one of the press guys who said, you could buy him for 10 million now and sell him for three times that in a few years. And he's probably right. They probably are right. So as soon as he turns 17, I'm sure we're going to get him on the longest contract we're allowed. And I think it's good that Jokanović is giving him games when he can. And I thought last week he was very impressive. He's 16. This is what gets me. I was talking to my dad about this. We were, after watching the Cardiff game. And he gets knocked off the ball occasionally sometimes, but he's building that upper strength now. You can see how he's progressed over the last 3 or 4 months. So this May can't come soon enough for a lot of reasons. And one of them is getting Session on a contract.
I totally agree there, Mike. And listen, we're all seeing the speculation with him. So we want him under contract, but it can happen, like you said, until May. So we're just going to have to follow this story, and let's hope it goes our way that he signs a contract in May. All right, Mike, let's now go to one of our co-hosts, Guy Rove. He wants to know, are we buying Piazon permanently this month or just extending his loan? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting because last week he tweeted that he was very close to agreeing to loan, but nothing's been mentioned, and he apparently must be available tomorrow. So I suspect we may just extend the loan and give everyone the option to look at things in the summer. But, I've seen the fee of 4 million quoted, which personally I think is a little high. I would say 2.5 plus maybe 1.5 on various sort of clauses. But I think, again, he's a player who's underrated, and he's still young, isn't he? So, I mean, it would be nice to get him on permanent, but let's not overspend on it. And maybe let's just have the next few months seeing what more he can produce, which I still think would be best for both parties.
Okay, very good. Let's see how things play out with Piazon. We'll definitely have to check that out. All right, Mike, here's a question from Ashley Shorter. This goes back to our whole situation with Chris Martin. Were Derby just up to dirty tricks with the whole Martin saga? The fact that they say they want him back, then take David Nugent on loan. Were they just looking to upset the Fulham camp before the playoff run heats up? Now, I think this is everything to do with Stephen McLaren. I'm just going to share my thoughts on this. I think he just wanted the player, and I think he put his nose right in the middle of this. I don't think that this was deliberate, but who knows? Mike, what are your thoughts about this?
Okay, I mean, was there a deliberate plan by Derby to destabilise Martin and to get him back? I don't know if they sat down and said, yeah, this is what we're going to do. But, it's clear that McLaren liked him. He got the Derby job and made it quite clear very early on that he was surprised that Martin was allowed to go by Pearson and that he would have him back. And then you hear that they've offered him a contract extension and more money for the summer to try and tempt him to not sign for us. And it's all built up, and I'm sure McLaren has spoken to Martin, and he is his club's player, so I'm sure he's allowed to do that. But it's just how Martin has dealt with that issue. We've spoken about it before. There's various rumours about what might be behind him trying to push a decision either way by each team. But I think the fact that Martin and McLaren got on really well, I don't think there was a, as much as McLaren is the bad guy in all this, I don't think there was a major plan to destabilise everything. I think it just sort of snowballed into the situation that we had. But I think it's an interesting one. I looked at the rules on this, about player contracts on loan, And there's nothing in there that ever mentions a player on loan with an agreed fee and then having his contract, you know, a better contract offered to him by the parent club. You know, it's a scenario which I've never come across. So
it's a weird one.
It was a pretty, it was a pretty unique situation. And, you know, like I say, I mean, we're going to have to see how it plays out for the rest of the year, whether, you know, we end up buying him in the summer, who knows. But it all just leaves everyone with a sour taste. And it just gives me another reason not to like Derby, really.
Okay, my friend. All right. All right. Here's the final question. And I look forward to asking you this question because we've talked about this and you've talked about this player. This is from Brian Hughes. What's the likelihood that Tom Kearney is allowed to leave? And is the £10 million valuation worth it or enough?
I did hear, somebody did say that, you know, Kearney would be interested in working with Benitez and Newcastle. And let's be honest, you know, if Newcastle came in, then Kearney may well be interested. You know, they're a team that will get promoted. You know, Benitez, for all his faults, is recognised as a really good coach. So as a player, you can see the reasons why. But, you know, things transpired this week where, again, you know, there's a link for Kearney and, you know, figures bandied about. But apparently they may have inquired and Fulham gave them short shrift and said, you know, not interested and, you know, it'd be 20 million or whatever. But I struggle to see that kind of value. You're seeing players move and 10 million plus, but what are they, Russ? They're all strikers, aren't they?
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, midfield, championship midfielders for £10 million, you're not going to see many of them happening. Is Kearney worth that? He's probably worth that to us now in the position we're in, pushing for promotion. And if we had an offer, I'm sure we'd turn it down. But I couldn't see anyone really going to like 12, 13, 15 million for him. And at that kind of figure, I would have to put my sensible hat on, and I'm sure I'm going to get abuse for this. But I would have to say, you know, that is a lot of money. And, you know, here is a player who has played well this season, but there are games, you know, where he does disappear and he doesn't put his stamp on a game. So I'm not saying sell him, far from it. I want to keep him, but every player has their price. It's not 10 million as things stand today. But we all know what happens, you know. You know, bids come in and players have the power, as we, you know, as we have seen in you know, with other players who have wanted to try and move away, not loans, but, you know, players under our own contracts. So
sure.
Let's hope we can get through January without any serious bids. I don't think Newcastle will come back. You know, we've told them no. We've given them a big figure. It's not going to happen. But in the summer, if we don't make the playoffs, we don't get promoted, then, you know, he may well be up for grabs. And we may be in a situation where he is our best asset. And it goes back to the arguments I made last year about selling McCormick. You sell McCormick for a couple of reasons. And one of them is you use that money to reinvest. So if you suddenly can get 14, 15 million again in the summer, then you have to seriously consider it, because there's... Next season will be our last season for the parachute payments. We have invested quite a bit this year. So I think, again, we're getting back to the old FFP, balancing the books, creating your own cash to buy players. So we might be in that situation come the summer.
Okay, very good, Mike. And what's interesting about this, and I talked about this on Cottagers Confidential Roundtable when we were talking about Tom Kearney, you know, £10 million, £12 million, £13 million, it comes down to me, what's more valuable to Fulham right now? And that's, is it the player or the money? And for me right now, it's the player. They need the player. He's integral to what they do. Right now, I'm talking about to get through January, you need the player for this season. That's the way I look at it. But you bring up a good point, Mike. Every player has a price. What would be the price for him? But for me right now, the way Fulham are built right now, I think they need him, and I would expect them to basically say no, because I think he's more valuable than the money that they could get for January. And you bring up a good point about We'll have to see over the summer. We'll have to see where Fulham end up. But for right now, you hold on to the player. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, all right, I mean, Mike. Sorry, Russ, can I just come back
to
that? Yeah, so, yeah, and I think you hit on the nail there. The situation we're in at the moment, we don't need to sell him. We want to keep him. There is no price. We're not going to get relegated.
That's right.
And let's see what happens where we are in the summer, because he's going to be more useful for us pushing for promotion. Whereas 12 months ago, we had a young striker whose contract was run out in the summer. We could have sold Dembele to Spurs for 5 million. We wanted a player from them, a striker. They couldn't offer anyone, and we decided to say, no, we need him. He's more important than the 5 million for us to stay up. And in the end, that was the right decision to make. And so it's sort of reversed this year, where, you know, we want to get promotion. So you're going to keep that player because you want promotion. So, you have to look at the whole picture of how the season is going, where we are in that year, and the value. Fulham have been notoriously bad at selling players when they're absolutely at their peak value. We did it. We got away with it last year with McCormick. But years gone by, we could have sold some of our players for a hell of a lot more than we ended up, you know, doing it. And Kearney is probably reaching that point, you know, that peak. And I suspect in the summer we will see that.
No, it's a good point, Mike. And what's interesting that I think also adds a little piece to this is Slavisa himself. The way Slavisa is and also the way that he interacts with ownership, because he's a very powerful individual. I'm talking about the way that he shows himself, that he wants his team. He's very confident in what he wants. And, you know, Fulham last season, you know, you just mentioned Dembele. We could talk about McCormack. They definitely showed that they could withstand all the pressure to sell those two players, and they kept on to those two players. That was the right thing to do. And here's more situations coming up. We just talked about Chris Martin. They're showing strength. And I think they would show the same strength with Tom Kearney. They put Fulham first, Mike. I think that's the bottom line with all of this. You have to evaluate. And over the summer, I think they made a proper evaluation with McCormack. They put Fulham first because they knew that they could use that money well. So the situation was a little bit different in January than it was over the summer. But in all cases, Mike, they put Fulham first. I think that's something very important to talk about before we move on.
I mean, there's definitely a situation where, you know, owners and chairmen have cashed in the past, and we could have cashed in last year. And there's still fans who talk about Khan pocketing money. So, I mean, you know, if that's what it's all about, then yeah, you sell him this in January, don't you? And sell Dembele last January, you know, just to get the money. And they're not, because for all the faults that some of the fans think about the club and how it's run and, you know, things they do and don't do, in the end, they do want it to work. They do want a successful club. And, you know, keeping Kearney this month is that kind of progression that we need. You know, we need to keep him. We need to keep our best players. So, Khan wants the best. McIntosh wants the best for everything. And Jukanovic will not want to lose his captain. You know, to all intents and purposes, he is the club captain at the moment. You know, Parker, or the on-field captain, Parker being the club captain. And that's all part of keeping him happy as well, isn't it? You know, let's not muck about it. He's been given that job because he is key player to the team and he is wanted by others. And you know, giving the captaincy to a player is always seen that way.
Right, Mike. And, you know, that's why, you know, he is key to what they do. And it goes back to what we talked about before. That's why I can just see Fulham just basically saying no. And they have shown over the course of Slavisa being at Fulham strength. And that's why I wanted to say, putting Fulham first, because I think it's important that they not think about, you know, the situation where, well, we got this money and we got to take the money because the money's so great. Well, it's about what you do with the money. You have to think about what's more important It's putting Fulham first. And that's why I think Tom Kearney staying is more important than the money that you're going to get from him. Again, I don't have a dollar figure or pound figure here, but it's putting Fulham first. It's making that evaluation. We are more valuable with this player than the money. And they've shown that time and time again, that they've put Fulham first, because they could have easily sold Dembele, McCormack in January, but they knew that they needed these players to stay up, and they did the right thing. All right, Mike, let's now get into our preview of the Barnsley match. And, I like to go through a little stats comparison. So let's start here. A little comparison between Barnsley and Fulham that I get from whoscored.com. And this is basically their places in the league in each category here. So let's start with possession. Fulham are currently second in the league at 57.8. Barnsley is 16th at 48.8. Shots per game. Fulham are first, 16.1 per game. Barnsley are fourth with 14. Aerials 1, Fulham are dead last with 17 per game. Barnsley are 6th with 24.7. Passing success, Fulham are first, 82.9. Barnsley are 18th at 70.2. Crosses per game, Fulham are first, 24 per game. Barnsley are 19th at 21. Through balls, they're tied for first with 2. And Barnsley are tied for third with 1. Long balls, Fulham are last in the league with 66 long balls per game. And Barnsley are tied for 14th at 78. Short passes, Fulham are currently first in the league with 497. And Barnsley are 19th with 278. Okay, Mike, just with the comparison between the two teams, what does it tell you?
Yeah, so I had a look at some of their stats, and one that you're not mentioning, though, is the sort of positional, the sort of side that they attack on. So 45% of their game is played on the
I was about to go there. I should have went there. Sorry.
I jumped ahead there.
That's okay.
You know, so that's interesting. That's going to be a tough game for Malone, maybe. You know, that's what we're going to see. I thought their pass success is 69%, which isn't great. So. Right. But they're an aggressive team, you know. They win 50% of their headers, so it's going to be, I think, similar to a number of games we've seen this year, which is, you know, we're going to have a lot of the ball. We're at home, obviously, but you know, a lot of the ball, and I don't, you know, they probably, I wouldn't say direct, but it's less passing from them, you know, getting the ball forward, and I think we're going to see some, you know, some real hard tackling from them, you know, the typical sort of northern team coming down to London. So but they've also, you know, stats wise, you know, they get the same shots. You know, they take more longer shots by looking. I might have misread that, but that's what it sounds like. So a bit more quicker in their passing, you know, less passing to get the ball forward, more aggressive than us, and Malone's going to have a busy game. That's pretty much what I can take from that. But there is one other, you know, they've scored 4 counter-attack goals out of the ones they've done. So, you know, we know how shaky we can be in those kind of situations. So maybe that's something we need to look at.
Okay, very good, Mike. And I think some of what you're talking about is going to back up when I go through some more information from whoscored.com on Barnsley. Let's now go and let's look at where they are in the league. They're currently 8th. 11 victories, 5 draws, 9 losses. They've scored 43. They've given up 37. They're on a +6 goal differential and are on 38 points. Fulham are 10th. 9 victories, 9 draws, 6 losses. 41 scored, 30 given up, +11 goal differential, and are on 36 points. This is according to WhoScored.com, just to give you some characteristics of their team. Strengths, very strong at finishing, scoring chances, counterattacks, and attacking set pieces, stealing the ball from the opposition. All these categories, very strong. They are strong at creating scoring chances and creating long shot opportunities. Their weaknesses, they're weak at stopping opponents from creating chances, defending set pieces, defending counterattacks. They're very weak protecting the lead, and we saw that against Fulham. Their style, take a lot of shots, attacking down the right, take long shots, attempted attempt crosses often, attempt through balls often, aggressive. Opponents play aggressively against them. Consistent first 11. Okay, now let's go to the attack sides. Like you said, Mike, they go down the right-hand side 45% of the time, middle 22% of the time, left 33% of the time. Their action zones. This is interesting. Their own third 29% of the time, middle third 41% of the time, and in the opposition's third 30% of the time. They tend to play a 4-4-2. There's some information from you from WhoScored.com. What do you make of it in regards to Barnsley and this match with Fulham?
It's a strange one. You know, Barnsley seem to have just sneaked into, you know, eighth place without anyone really, you know, taking any notice. And they're probably the most unfashionable club in the top 10. And, you know, looking at one of the things is that, you know, they keep quite a tight squad. So now that they're possibly going to lose two of their players, it'd be interesting to see if they can keep this sort of run going and you know, stay in the top 8 or 10. But it's what I said earlier, you know, it looks like they're going to be, you know, aggressive, counter-attack. One of the things I worry about is, you know, they're creating long shot opportunities because, as we know, Button isn't the greatest at at stopping those kind of shots. So, you know, it's going to be closing down them in attacking positions as well. But it's going to be a hard game. You know, you don't in this league, you're not eighth because you're rubbish. So we shouldn't take them lightly.
Definitely.
And it's going to be a tough game. But you know, I'll say later. But I think, you know, we should have enough quality to get the right result. But I think it's going to be a typical Championship game, a real bloody hard workout, and one goal wins it, really.
Okay, Mike. Sam Winnell has moved to Sheffield Wednesday. It's official. So there you go there. So that's actually a big deal for Fulham, Mike.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's their striker. I know a number of Fulham fans were very keen on him as well, you know, possibly coming to us. But I think, you know, he's, you know, staying in the north. And, you know, it's good for us that he's not around tomorrow. You know, hopefully they're going to be a bit demoralised, you know, lost their main striker. So it's certainly good news for us.
Absolutely, my friend. It's actually very good news because I checked this morning and I saw the comments from the manager for Barnsley. He was non-committal on that. And then, of course, well, there's a reason for it because it wasn't official yet. Well, it's now official. This player is now playing tomorrow, and that's actually a big deal for Fulham for the match tomorrow. All right, Mike, let's now break this down. Let's now get into it, my friend. Who are your key players tomorrow for Fulham?
Okay, so based on the fact that I think Martin is going to start and the pressure he's going to be under, I'm going to say Martin is a key player. And I'm going to say Callis, you know, Martin and Callis, so either end of the pitch, really. Callis, because he just brings that, not steel, but that calmness, and just goes about the job in a very Hughes-like way of, you know, winning the headers, just passing the ball. You very rarely sort of notice he's there, whereas with Maddle, with Ream and Sigurdsson, you're always noticing them for good and bad reasons. But Callis is almost like the invisible man there at the back. And as I say, Martin, key to how we play, but it will be, he needs to put in a performance tomorrow because he will have a hard time tomorrow from the fans. I don't think there's any doubt of that.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, what does Fulham need to do to win this match? This is a decent counter-attacking team. They took advantage of Fulham's mistakes last time they played. So how did Fulham win this match, my friend?
Okay, so, I mean, it's the obvious one. Score first for us at home. let's stop chasing games all the time. And as we mentioned in sort of, you know, the stats and their style, is make sure they don't get the shots in, because I'm you know, Button or Bettinelli, whoever you think is going to play, I don't think either goalkeeper is great at stopping long shots. But so I would be looking for, you know, McDonald and Johansson and Cairney to be blocking the midfield before they get in front of the defenders. And then it's all about closing them down. So, and Malone, you know, if they do really attack down that right-hand side a lot, then we're going to have to be backing him up. So it's going to be interesting who plays on that left side of the centre defenders, who's going to support him, because I think, you know, that's going to be required. And if Piazon plays, he's not the greatest in backing up on the left. So it's going to be the centre back and Malone who are going to be busy on that side of the pitch. So, it's defend well. Defend well tomorrow. We've got goals in this. I've no doubt about that. So it's defend well is how we win that game tomorrow.
Okay. And I totally agree with you there, Mike. All right, Mike. Starting 11 time. What do you have?
Okay. So I'm going to pick what I think will be Jokanović's starting 11. So I think Button will go back in goal. I mean, Bettinelli didn't do anything wrong last week, but he didn't really have much else to do. And I think he will keep faith with Button. I think the back four will be, I think Fredericks will go back to full-back position. Callis will start. Malone will be left back. So it's pick one of the three centre-backs. And I think he will actually go with Ream. I know Maddo is fit. And Sigurdsson didn't do too bad last week. But I just got this feeling that Jokanović likes Ream's footballing ability, you know, with the ball at his feet. And also, I have to say, as a naturally left-footed centre-back, I'm not convinced by Sigurdsson there. I'm not convinced by Maddle there either. And we all know that Ream, you know, is prone to some mistakes. But I think, because of who we're playing, because it seems as if they seem to attack down that side, he's going to go with a naturally left-footed centre-back, so I go with Ream. The three central midfielders, do I have to even mention them? They're all going to start. And I think the two wide guys will be Aluko and Piazon. I don't see any reason to change that. And then up front, I can't see him going with Smith. And he didn't
I
last
think it's
week
gonna
in
be
the
Martin.
Cup.
I think it's going to
it's
be
gonna
mine.
It's going to be mine. It's going to be mine. And I see no other decision to be made there. There was talk that it could be Humphreys. I just don't see it. I just think he's going to throw him straight out there and get on with what you were doing before you started wanting to suck your thumb in a corner and cry. You know, so get out on the pitch and do it from the start. So that's what I think would be Jokanović's starting team.
I think it's going to be a starting 11, Mike. I think you probably nailed it. We'll see tomorrow, but I think you probably got it right. Most of it picks itself, like you said. But I think you might have nailed the starting 11. All right, let's now go to predictions. Let's start with the Cottage Talk Twitter poll I did earlier. I had 232 votes. That's a good amount of votes. Win was at 88%, draw was at 10%, and loss was only at 2%. Now I'll just share some predictions. I got a good amount of predictions. Colin Fortnell, 2-0 to Fulham. Eugenia Kukina, if I said that wrong, I apologize. 3-1. Ben Reed, I'm feeling very confident about the team, with or without Chris Martin, who, let's face it, was hardly a world beater anyway. 3-0 to Fulham. Brendan Cronin, 2-0 to Fulham. Andy Robbins, I think we could have a big win tomorrow, 4-0. Nick East, win and clean sheet. That's always important, clean sheet. Hopefully a win, a great team performance, bring him my fiance and all the kids. For some of them, it's their first football match ever. This is from Andy Dean. Andy, enjoy yourself, my friend. I hope you see a Fulham victory. Barry Palmer, 2-0 to Fulham. Andy Newland, 3-1 to Fulham. James E, 2-0. Stephen Moore, 2-0 to Fulham. Simon Rugg, 3-1 to Fulham. Gerald Graves, 3-1 to Fulham. Ryan Fulick, 5-0 to Fulham. Phil Hopper, 2-0 to Fulham. Ian Walworth, has to be a convincing win to get playoff aspirations back on track. Okay, and we've got more, but I could keep going on and on. I'm only seeing Fulham victories here, Mike. All right, over to you. What's your prediction for the match?
Actually, I actually did some research on this and looked back over Barnsley's results, and they've got a couple of weird ones, but I think we're going to go 2-0. I think that's looking the best results. I think with Callis back, we're going to be stronger in defence, and we're going to have too much form in midfield and up front. So 2-0, 0-0 at half time, 2-0 final victory.
Okay, very good. Mike, I'm going to go 3-1 to Fulham. I'm not going to predict goal scores because I always hear from it from David Holly, and I just can't stand hearing from him about my predictions. So enough with me predicting goals. I'm not going to do that anymore. But I'm going 3-1 to Fulham. I wish we could get a clean sheet, but I just have a feeling that we're going to make one mistake and they're going to capitalize on it like they did last time. So I'm going to say 3-1 to Fulham. All right. Great show, Mike. Great show. Thank you so much for doing this with me, my friend. Before we go, final thoughts from you.
Yeah, just that hopefully tomorrow we can get a decent win, good performance, and start this run of games that we, you know, we've spoken about before. We need that, you know, 5-6 games in a row wins to get us in that top six position and start frightening the other teams. You know, we're getting lots of plaudits about how good we are and best team we've seen. We need to turn that into points and this run of wins. So if we're not going to do it over the games coming up, then it's unlikely we're going to do it any other time this season.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, great show, like I said. My final thoughts are basically just dealing with the transfer window. We still have plenty of time in the transfer window to make deals, and I'm hopeful that we're going to be seeing a deal or two from Fulham. I think we're going to see a striker. Maybe we'll see a center back. We'll see what happens. But I just say just be patient, and deals will be done. You know, I know other teams are making deals. We're seeing it. It's not always the team that makes the first move is the team that gets the best of a deal. So sometimes you got to be patient, and let's see what they come up with. They made many moves over the summer. I'm confident that they're going to make a move or two before the transfer window shuts. And I'm trying to be patient, and we'll see how it all plays out. But I do think that they will make moves, and there's still plenty of time left in the transfer window. That's my final thought. All right, it is time to wrap up this show. For Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.